An haberdasher and a carpenter, a web, a deer and a tapisser, and I were clothed all in all livrée, I was solemn and a great fraternité. So, they're all wearing the same livery, which means they belong to the same...
guild?
Well, could be, except they're not going to belong to the same guild, because one's a haberdasher, you know, they sell handkerchiefs and things. You know.
Right.
You don't hear that word nowadays, do you? I just popped down to the haberdasher.
Not the same way, no. It'd be the tailor or the...
Yeah. Jane Austen mentions them. Carpenter, a weaver, a dyer, and a rug maker.
Ah.
Something like that.
But they'd be on the same street.
Yeah. Yeah, they would.
Okay.
But, you know, those three could almost be in the same guild, but the
carpenter would. No. Okay.
So it could also mean that they're followers of the same lord or family or clan or whatever.
Right.
Because that's what livery also referred to. And they belong to a solemn, august brotherhood, fraternité. And of course he's taking the piss a bit here because he doesn't think that making tables is in any way solemn or august.
Right, of course.
But Jeff might. Jeff probably does.
Gotcha.
But in fact, if you've seen any of the kind of modern reflexes of these guilds and liveries in the 20th century, they're enormously, you know, they're robes, they outdo academic robes.
Oh.
Oh, God, yes. They're so elaborate.
They still exist?
Yeah, they have. Of course they do. Well, the merchant tailors.
Okay.
Who have a grammar school, of course.
Right.
Lots of them. And they are very wealthy because they've had, you know, 600 years of people wealthy, wealthy burghers contributing money.
Right.
And land and God knows what. So, yeah. And they hold these huge, sumptuous feasts.
Huh. Well, it's not something you see in Australia, I suppose.
No. The Swagman's Guild.
Yeah.
Mm. Doesn't quite work. Yeah, for fresh and new her gear her peaked was. It's all fresh and new, their gear. Her knivers were a chappet knocked with brass, but all with silver. So none of your cheap knives, you know, with brass handles, but all with silver. Wrought full clean and well, beautifully made, beautifully wrought. Her girdles and her pooches every dell. These are about their person, their girdles and their little pouches.
That hang.
Purses that hang, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why being a cut person in this period was kind of easy. Because they had a little leather thing dangling there. All you had to do was just...
I guess the difficult bit was catching what came out.
Oh, no. Well, no. You snip the...
You just cut off at the string.
Yeah, cut off at the string. Are you away? And you're off in the crowd before anyone can... Yeah.
Chris has just sent last update. I don't want to look.
But also, of course, it's handy because then you can say, drink that, my man, and toss them your purse of gold.
Ah. Mm. And that's a nice flourish?
Well, it's a reward.
Oh, okay.
You know, doing something.
Mm-hmm.
A tip, even.
Hmm.
I mean, you wouldn't go around with the old fortune dangling from your waist.
No.
No.
That's what's funny, now we all have cards, which...
Yes, have I? Oh, that's right. Exactly. Mm. Well, same at each of them have fired Burgess to sit and yell to all on a dice. So each of them seemed to be a fair burgess. Again, a sort of self-important bourgeois of a town, you know, who's made his money out of sheep's giblets or something. And now wears his fancy robes and sits on a dice.
And no one respects it because...
Well, no! Yeah, because they're basically aping the aristocracy in a curious sort of way, you know.
Yeah.
All this self... But it just looks like empty self-importance.
Yes.
Because remember what we were saying earlier about the kind of official roles that you could adopt in medieval society?
Those who work, those who pray, those who fought.
Fight, yeah. And those who sell sheep's giblets aren't in there.
Yes.
So their pretensions to importance are felt to be absurd, slightly.
Mm. I can understand why.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, it's funny, isn't it? Because this, again, there's so much continuity in English culture, social culture. Mm. But this, for example, contempt for trade is the 18th century, isn't it? You know, an aristocrat and somebody from trade. But of course, very often the aristocrat by then was broke.
Mm-hmm.
And the person from trade was doing very nicely, thank you.
Yeah.
So, of course, you marry your daughter to him. And but you still look down your nose at
him. Oh, yeah. And you're right, that has stayed.
Well, think of in Emma, think of the attitude to the vicar's new wife, you know? Her.
Yeah.
who's made her money out of trade in Bristol. Emma's very sniffy about this.
Yeah.
though there is a hint, it's a delicate hint, that being Bristol, this trade might include the slave trade.
Oh, of course.
Bristol was a...
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
Hub.
A hub, yes. People abuse Austin for not explicitly denouncing slavery, as though you had to. It should be like saying, you know, murder's actually a bad idea. I don't advise it at all. Instead of giving her praise for the clever ways in which she shows that it's kind of knitted into, all, you know, the comfortable wealth of Mansfield Park sits upon, you know, people cutting sugarcane in the Jamaican sun.
Mm.
Which is much more subtle. The danger of subtlety is that people will miss it.
As we know.
Yes. I mean, many readers of this would have taken Jeff at face value, I suspect. Or some. There weren't that many readers around, of course, I suppose.
Literacy.
That's right. Everidge for the wisdom that he can was Shapley for to be an alderman. Or each of them for their wisdom. Their wisdom is such an elevated word for what these people know. Was appropriate to be an alderman. Again, an alderman, a kind of civic official.
Respected in the community.
Sort of.
Okay.
A county, you know, a councillor. You've got the mayor. And the mayor and the alderman would always be rich bourgeois. Basically, that's
with sway and influence in the community. Yeah,
that's right. I mean, bourgeois, of course, is just the French version of bourg, which just means a town or a city.
Huh. I learnt last night that we got bugger from Bulgarian.
Hmm.
The history of Christianity.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, it's because, well, you know why.
Well, yeah, they wanted to basically say that they were deviant. Sexually.
Well, because they were deviant theologically.
Yeah.
And therefore...
align the two, yeah, and there you exactly. go. Wonderful insult went forever.
So, exactly.
Wow. Yeah. Nick doesn't let me read... Well, he doesn't actually mind, but he's like, every time you read that next to me on the couch, I'm interrupted every 5 minutes with a new fact.
Oh, that's good. Who's it by?
Diarmid McCullough.
Diarmid... Oh. Oh, okay. Good. Good fun.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm trying to fill in some gap.
For cattle had they in ochen rente. Cattle, of course, means cattle, but it also means wealth. Interesting.
That's right. We talked about this last time.
Chattels, yes, which is the same word, but
because you would pay
with a
cow.
Well, in the past.
Yes. Well, because you said that now, if your doctor sends you a bill.
Oh, yes.
You're within your rights to send him a cow in return.
Yes, exactly. And you'd expect change from the cow.
Oh, okay.
Maybe a sheep.
A small piglet.
A small piglet. That's right. And, of course, pecus is Latin for sheep, and it gives us the word pecuniary. So it's...
Of course. Of course.
Oh, and, of course, feoch is the Old English for cattle, and it means... fee now, it's turned into fee.
That's what we talked about. Yeah. Yes, nice.
It's a nice reminder, isn't it, that these people are self-important and they're living in the city. It's the beginning of that kind of the independent life, yeah, of the city from the countryside. Not, I mean, not even in London you had cattle and sheep and pigs and things. And, you know, if you're a free man of the city of London, for example, you have the right to drive sheep over London Bridge.
Still?
Well, apparently.
Okay.
They made...
Because there was only one bridge, and so that was a big deal.
Oh, yes, yeah, absolutely. Right up to the 18th century, sorry. what's his name? The QI chap, you know.
QI?
You don't know QI? It's a brilliant sort of quiz program.
Oh,
it's
yeah. Dana QI host.
Yes.
Stephen Fry.
Stephen Fry, thank
Stephen
you.
Fry.
Stephen Fry.
Right, yes.
Well, he became a freeman in the city, and he, I think he tried to drive
he would. Sheep.
Yes.
You would.
But he ran into regulations.
Ah. Mm. Red tape.
Red tape. I mean, if a man can't drive sheep over London Bridge, what's the world coming to?
I know.
So, and Elis certain were they to blame. And Eich Hirwivers will did well assent. Their wives, too, were very keen on this pomp and circumstance. It is full fire to be an eclipid, madame, and gone to vigils I'll before, and have a mantle royal she bore.
So you, what any woman would want.
Yes.
Of course.
And, of course, the idea that, you know, going to vigils, which is sort of, Saints' Day vigils, so religious celebrations, celebrating your pomp and circumstance.
There's some irony there.
Nice irony, yes. And have a mantle royally chibor. Your cloak is royally borne behind you.
Mm.
But of course, that reminds you that you're not actually any kind of royalty or any kind of aristocracy or anything, really. You're just a jumped up, you know, butcher.
It's like driving through Turek now, kind of thing.
That's right. Well, that's right. These people almost count as nouveau riche, and they're trying to sort of...
It's conspicuous consumption, trying to stand out.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yes, except not so much by conspicuous consumption as by conspicuous display. I suppose
they're
kind of, you know... But here it's not so much that you're, you know, you're buying Gucci bags and Dior tiaras or, I don't know. Did Dior make tiaras?
I don't know.
But that you're aping, I mean, you're conforming to these, the kind of uniforms, splendid and showy and so on, but the kind of thing that you wear as an alderman to show how important you are.
Mm.
You know, it's not an individualistic display, put it that way.
It's
part of a...
We've lost it now.
Yeah, we have. Not. Well, except in academia, where you put on your finery.
When do we get to wear it, though?
Well, I try to go to one graduation a year.
Oh, okay.
Hmm.
Huh.
So, do you
sit there? What do you have to do?
Oh, I know. It's very boring. Well, occasionally I've had to read out the names, which is very interesting.
Oh. I suppose you'd be the one to ask.
Well, yes.
Pronounce them all.
Well, that's true. But the trouble is, sometimes you're wrong to pronounce it correctly. Because you... Because you see a German name and you give it a German pronunciation, but these people are, you know, third generation Aussies, and they no longer use German pronunciation, they use an English pronunciation of their German name.
That's funny.
So, basically, I mean, people should all just give a little recording on their phone of how they want their name to be said.
But you'd have to memorise a lot of them. Or I suppose you could have an earpiece,
yeah,
and it
earpiece.
Could read it out to
yeah,
you,
true.
And then you could read it out to everyone else.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Anyway. So it's quite fun to, because it's a corporate identity. You come in now. You know, every university has slightly different.
Yeah.
But a lot of universities, for example, follow either Oxford or Cambridge in their doctor's robes. So you know, you all look sort of the same. So you've got this corporate identity of academia, into which the new students are absorbed because they leave, of course, with the academic crowd.
Hmm.
Not with the like an initiation ceremony.
Hmm.
You're separated from your parents and you join the professional.
Hmm.
But that's it. So it's a corporate identity, but still a lot of pomp and circumstance. I like wearing academic robes.
Sponsored by Amazon.
That's right. A cook they had with them for the Normus. That's good. That's what you need. To boil the chickens with the marrowbones. Obviously boil the chickens and the marrowbones.
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, we now have the Marrowbone Cricket Club.
I guess we do.
Yeah. And poudre marchant tart and garingale. These are obviously contemporary dishes. Galengal is a spice, and so is Marchant is a spice. So preparing spices, I suppose. Well, could he know a draught of London Ale? Well, he knew well a draught of London Ale. And of course, that's a little joke, a little double meaning. Could here meaning was acquainted with.
Okay.
He could a roast and save and boil and free. Broil. So, you know, all the cooking operations, they haven't changed much, have they? To seethe is to boil.
Yeah, I mean.
If you say somebody was seething,
boiling,
it's a metaphor.
And rage, yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's right. It's related to the word sodden, in fact. Marken motrex and well, barcapia. Notice how many French terms there are here, because, of course, the French brought over their cuisine.
With
things
the Norman
don't
invasion in 1066.
Yeah, exactly, okay. Exactly. And Anglo-Saxon cuisine was probably not very complex or various. And you know, it kind of hasn't changed, has it? It's very interesting, again, how these cultural stereotypes don't change. Editing that book of characters, you know, the character of a Frenchman. Frenchmen basically want, they eat lots of crazy fancy food that no proper Englishman would like.
Mm.
They're effeminate, they're all dancing masters, and they have these crazy cultural theories that nobody can understand.
Okay.
That hasn't kind of changed in 400 years. Or the attitude hasn't changed. The prejudice.
Dirty frogs. That sort of thing.
Yes, exactly. So a motre is a thick soup, and you could well bake a pie. But then notice the lovely randomness again that characterises Geoff. We keep being reminded of this, of his kind of wandering eye that doesn't sort. And but great harm was it, as he thought the may, don't a shin a mormal had a hair. Mormal is a kind of ulcer.
Oh.
So it's rather a pity that he had this dirty great ulcer on his shin. And of course, it's not mere pity, it's kind of disgusting if the cook.
Yeah. Is that the point? That's the point.
That's the point,
okay.
Yes.
Yeah, he's gross.
He's gross, yes. But Jefferson kind of noticing that in a way. But notice the interest of this and how unmedieval it is. Because the medieval mind deals absolutely in stereotypes and given, you know.
This is what a cook should be, a French cook. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but this cook has a dirty great ulcer on his shin. Now, that is not a stereotypical thing. That must belong to Fred Nurk, this particular cook. In fact, a lot of effort scholarly effort has been made to identify actual living people in 14th century. Yeah, I know.
With ulcers?
Well, no.
Oh, okay, sorry, we're using the portraits.
Yeah, using the portraits.
They're missing the entire point.
Right, of course they are.
Okay.
Yes, of course they are. It's batty.
All right.
But, what can I say? But yes, apparently and the point is, obviously not that there might have been a cook with an ulcer, but that we're getting a sense of verisimilitude.
Ah.
That we're not talking to a bunch of allegorical figures in a imaginary garden, but we're talking to real people. So it's rather clever.
Because it's new in literature.
Yes, yes. Because it's something that comes in with the novel.
Of course. Yeah. Everyone was going on pilgrimages. It would have been reasonable that a cook was on a pilgrimage.
Oh, everybody.
It would have been affordable.
Well, everyone had the same spiritual life, you know.
So everyone wanted to go.
Well, yeah, and we've talked about this, why they go. They're going partly... Like,
yeah, the complicated...
And it's a holiday, too. I mean, I'm off to Sydney this week, and it's tomorrow. Shit.
Yeah.
And it's partly to tell people about the development of Shakespeare, how Shakespeare became Shakespeare in this particular corner of study. But it's also because of holiday, and you know, Sydney's a fun place, and you know. So the same complicated motives drew people on pilgrimage.
Yes.
Which is why everybody's there. you felt more devotional urge towards saints than you did towards God or
because
Christ.
Because you could identify with them. They were people.
They were people.
Yeah.
And you could have a word in their ear and they could have a word in God's ear.
Whereas getting to God was... It's like getting to the Queen while she's dead.
Yes.
What's his face? Big ears.
Oh, God. Yes.
Yeah.
You can't do it. Just as in medieval society, you can't talk to the king, you can't approach him with a petition, but you can talk to the Earl of Doodleplop, who can maybe talk to the king, or talk to somebody who can talk to somebody who can talk to the king.
Yep. Okay.
You know the old song, I danced with a girl who danced with a man who danced with the Princess of Wales? Or something?
No. I do not, but I get the point. Yeah, <that's right. laughs> 6 degrees of separation.
Something like
all
that.
Of that.
Yes.
Okay, sorry.
Our cook
has an ulcer.
Oh, yes, an ulcer, yes. Again, notice the randomness, because the next line is, for blanc manger, that Marty with the best. Blanc manger looks like blancmange. It's not actually blancmange in our sense. It's a savoury dish.
Oh, okay. He made a good...
He made a damn good blancmange, or what they call blancmange.
What's a blancmange?
It's
no idea.
Look it up. It's spelled blancmange, and it's from the French blanc meaning white and manger meaning to eat.
Oh, okay. Like a little.
It's like a sort of
gelatiny.
Yeah.
Snack.
So you've never heard the expression, "You can't nail a blancmange to the wall."
No. I've maybe heard you can't nail jelly to the wall, which I suspect.
Well, it's very similar. Very similar.
Okay. Well, that looks quite yum.
Hmm.
Okay. Cool. Thank you.
So you've never eaten blancmange?
I might have and not known the name.
No, it's true.
Yeah.
It is true. That random observation is all we hear of the cook.
Hmm.
At the end, you know.
Yeah, the cook gets like 5 lines.
It's 5 lines. And again, it's all kind of random. Then we've got the shipman, who gets a bit more time. A shipman was a warning to be the fairy be west, dwelling far in the west. So this is an old tradition. I mean, you know, the west of England, of course, is a big peninsula that sticks out like a big toe into the Atlantic. And it's the West Country. It's Dorset.
It's cold.
No.
No.
No, on the contrary. Au contraire. It is.
No, because the wind's blowing to Cambridge on the other side.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But this is about the Gulf Stream.
Okay.
You about the Gulf Stream?
No.
Oh.
Carry on.
The Gulf Stream is a body of heated, warm water that starts in the Caribbean and flows northeast towards Europe, and towards England in particular. So England, in fact, is much warmer than it ought to be by its latitude.
Huh.
It ought to be just, you know, freeze your tits off.
Frozen tundra.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Okay.
But it isn't because of the in when I was a child in 1963, this is a rabbit hole, sorry.
Carry on.
The Gulf Stream was diverted for 1 year. And that was terrifying. The snow came in October and hung around till May.
Wow.
Even we children got sick of it, you know. And it was thick, deep snow.
Wow.
A kind you never see nowadays. Why on earth are we talking about the Gulf Stream?
Because the West Country.
It is relevant.
Yeah.
West Country.
It is, yeah.
So the West Country is warm.
Okay.
They're in tip of Cornwall, you can grow palm trees and things.
Oh, wow. That's where everyone goes to Cornwall for holidays.
Yeah, it's warm. The Scilly Isles.
Yeah, okay.
Which used to be spelt Silly. But the inhabitants got fed up with living in the Scilly Isles. So they stuck a C in front of the I. Anyway, and that's where a lot of seafaring happens, because there's a lot of coast. You know, it's a big protruding peninsula.
And if you were leaving for America, would you leave from...
A lot of the time, yes. Bristol, for example, was a...
Slave trade. Right.
Yeah,
easy,
absolutely.
Easy to get in there.
And then there's Plymouth. Plymouth is also, that's, you know, a major... naval town, Plymouth. That's also in the West Country. So it's a hugely important seafaring area. And, you know, of course, it has a rhotic dialect, or set of rhotic... Rhotic means you pronounce R after vowels, like farm. Down on the farm.
That's what that's called. Okay.
Yeah, rhotic. R-H-O-T-I-C.
I'm just looking at a map of England. Help. Okay.
You can see the big toe there?
The big toe,
Huge inflamed big toe.
Okay.
Now, you know pirates.
Yes.
They typically talk with a West Country accent. Warr, my lads.
And that's why I have Pirates of Penzance.
Exactly. And it's because of this whole connection between the West and the sea. You know, this is kind of pirate language. That's why pirates go, arr. Arr, Jim lad. Arr.
I'm glad that's now on record for everyone at home. There you go. Okay.
You know International Talk Like a Pirate Day?
Yes, I'm aware. Yes.
Oh, good. I think it's October or something.
I haven't partaken.
Haven't you really?
No. Okay.
You could do an interesting experiment. Always and only talk around Sylvie in a West Country accent or something like that. Or a Scottish accent.
Oh, I can't do Scottish.
Of course, everybody in this period has a rhotic accent. You'd be interested to learn, before we leave this, that non-rhotic accents in English, which, of course, Australian English is non-rhotic, didn't arise till the 18th century. So everyone
spoke like a pirate.
So when Shakespeare says war, he says war. You know, it's a much stronger word. War.
And then if people are also lisping to sound sexy.
Yes, that's right. Or murder. Now, murder sounds much more... That's a Scots way of saying it.
Yeah.
Scots is rhotic, obviously. Sounds much more serious than murder. Murder sounds a bit limp-wristed, doesn't it? Murder. But murder.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Yes.
So, coming back to
Spencer would have been rogue.
Oh, absolutely everybody and his dog. Yeah, wow. The Queen Elizabeth.
So her speech at Tilbury Docks.
Yes, right. Exactly.
Puts a different spin on everything, really.
Well, it does. We just unconsciously edit them into modern English, which is non-rogue. So, I mean, lots of Shakespeare's speeches, we miss a lot of the sound play if we read them non-rhotically.
That's so important.
Very important.
Nobody knows this.
No. Well.
Well, you do. But you are not the average bumpkin.
So.
Okay, shipman from...
A shipman, sir, from the West Country. Dartmouth. Dartmouth. Is there still, of course, obviously, it's in Dorset. Dorset, which Hardy writes about, of course, very much. He rode upon a runcie as a couth in a goon of falding to the knee. A runcie is a kind of, you know, crapped out horse. And falding is not very, rather cheap sort of coarse woolen material. So he's not concerned too much with his appearance. But he's got a dagger hanging on a last had hair, about his neck under his arm a doon. So it's handy to grab. It's hanging around his neck.
Slightly violent man.
Yes.
Compared to the haberdashers and so on who have some fancy knives.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And, yeah. The hot summer marred his hue all brune. So he's got a nice tan from the hot summer.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you know, there are, I don't know, just older scholars back in the 20s, 30s of, well, the last century now, isn't it? Wow. We're in the 20s of this century.
Yeah.
Hair-raising. who would try to identify what summer could that have been in the 1580s, you know, which was a very hot summer. It's just...
the bizarre era of academia.
Yeah. It's just a failure to understand what literature is and how it works.
Yes.
Essentially. And certainly he was a good fellow. A good fellow. Yes, but what does that mean?
Yeah.
The mafia call themselves good fellows.
I was
fellows.
Just thinking, it seems like he's missing the fact that this guy was ready to shib him for his coin at any moment.
Well, that's exactly it. That's exactly it, yeah. Full many a drach to ween had he draw from Burgessward, Will had the chapman slep. He'd taken many a draught of wine from Bordeaux, while the merchants were asleep. So not entirely, should we say...
upstanding?
Yes. Above board. Not entirely above board. Of Nisa conscience took in a cape. of nice, that is, finicky conscience. He didn't worry too much about things like that. Yeah. Wasn't too bad.
Not too... Well, why is... Oh, well, he's there for the travel. Well, then he's a pirate.
He's a pirate. Why he's basically a pirate, but...
That's what Jeff, it's telling us.
Yes. He's from,
yeah,
but
okay.
But it's telling us. It's not telling Jeff.
Yeah, okay.
A lot of sea trade was in a very kind of murky area between legitimate and piratical.
Like Raleigh.
Yeah, like Raleigh. Raleigh was a pirate, really, but he was, you know, he sometimes had letters of marque, which are permission to be a pirate from the sovereign. But you could only be a pirate against people who were kind of traditionally the enemy.
Like Spanish.
The Spanish.
Okay.
Yeah. You couldn't piratize English ships.
No. I can imagine. That
yes.
would cause issues.
It would.
That's why you had flags.
Exactly.
Why wouldn't you just fly, like, what? Be like, oh, that's an English ship coming, quick, put up an English flag, or...
Well, they did.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good.
Surely you've heard of the phrase false flag operations.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what it means.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So easy to hoodwink people back in the day.
Well, of course. That's right. You never saw the film Master and Commander?
No, I have not. Sorry.
You ought to. It's a very good film, but it's based on novels by a marvellous Irishman called Patrick something. But it's about the career of a naval captain in the Napoleonic Wars. And they're brilliantly written and really worth.
Okay.
If the Defochten had the Hierhund, so if he fights another ship, and you know, these ships didn't fight by blasting each other with a cannon. They basically, what you did was you got
right.
close.
Oh yeah.
Well, but these weren't designed for ramming. You're okay. thinking of galleys.
Galleons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Carry on.
No. You get close, and you put grappling hooks over, and then you board the other ship. And you fight.
Kill everyone in sight, yeah.
Well, it's just like a land battle, except at sea. You remember, this is what happened to Hamlet.
Oh, yeah.
He boards the ships, and then the ships part again, and he's stuck on the pirate vessel.
Yeah.
If he fought and had the upper hand, be water he sent him home to every land. By water he sent them home to every land.
He'd throw them in the water.
He drowned them.
Yeah. Because no one could swim.
Because no one could swim. Because superstition.
And also, you were seen as challenging God.
Yeah,
it was
that's
unnatural.
What I mean. Yeah.
How bizarre. Yeah.
Yeah. And in any case, if you're out at sea, swimming isn't going to be much good anyway.
Yeah, you're right. Yes. Coast Guard aren't coming for you.
That's right. So basically, he's a mass murderer.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah.
On his way to see Thomas Becket.
That's right. I mean, sent him home to every land, being, of course, the great home in the sky.
Yes. Speaking of, bets are on. Which circle of hell do you think Kissinger is in?
Oh.
This wasn't your immediate thought.
No.
You didn't dance.
Oh, that he's dead.
Yeah, he's dead.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Okay,
yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Yes. Oh no. What a vile man.
I think fraud.
Fraud. Yes.
Counselors.
I mean, he certainly should be in the river of blood, but then he goes deeper than that.
He's
so
such a dick.
He's a fraudulent counselor. He's exactly a fraudulent counselor.
I thought
maybe
layer what we've just done under Ulysses, next layer down.
Yeah.
With Guido.
Yes, that's right. He's a classic fraudulent counsellor.
But I feel like the punishment there isn't enough.
Yes.
Okay. That's your bet then?
Yeah, I think, absolutely.
We'll check when we turn up.
Yes, exactly. If your messenger find him not in heaven, seek him in the other place yourself. But of his craft... to reckon well his deeds, his stremes, and his dangers, him besieders. So his craft, a reckoning, meaning on the surface craft as skill, profession. He's good at his profession. He can reckon the tides and the dangers, that is, like shallows and rocks and things.
Jeff's quite taken with this one.
Yes, oh yes, he is. His harbourings and his moon, that is to say, he's pretty good at, he can reckon by the moon.
Which is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
We've lost that skill now.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
It's absolutely gone.
Yeah, that's right.
He's Lode Menaj, as in the Lodestar?
Yes. Well, yes, Lodestar. But Lodestar, of course, a Lode is a magnet.
So like the north?
It's called the Lodestar because a magnet will point north and the star is north and...
You can line the two up and know that your magnet's working. Yeah, okay.
Well, more to the point, you know where north is.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. There was no switch from Hull to Carthage. There was no man like him from Hull.
To Carthage?
Carthage could be Carthage, could be Cartagena, which is a town in southern Spain.
Ah.
Port in southern Spain. Probably more likely to be Cartagena.
Yeah.
I don't know how you would say Cartagena in English.
No.
we won't attempt.
We won't try.
Yeah. Hull, you know Hull is up on the...
My grandfather's from Hull.
Oh,
I've been to Hull.
I've been to Hull.
Ah.
Yeah. It's an interesting place.
Yeah.
Larkin, of course. Philip Larkin, the poet.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And, of course, most famously, Andrew Marvell.
Yes.
Who was MP for Hull for many years.
There you go.
Hardy he was and wist undertaker. So he was hardy, and he was not only hardy and you know, courageous, I suppose, but also he was prudent in judging.
You have to be.
Yeah.
Mm.
So you don't take on everybody.
Mm.
You have to know when to run away. With many a tempest had his beard been shaken. It's a funny phrase, that, isn't it? Shaking your beard.
So he was oldish?
Oh, no, well, everyone had a beard.
Okay. As in, like, is it grey? Is that what they're trying to say?
Oh, no. To shake someone's beard. Remember in Hamlet, where Claudius says to Laertes, do not think we will let our beard be shaken with impunity and call it jest or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, in other words, to be insulted.
Okay. Okay. So he's been in lots of fights.
Yes.
Right.
That's right. And storms, too.
Okay.
He knew all the haveners as they were, for a Gotland to the Cap of Finisterre. He knows all the havens, all the safe harbours, from Gotland, which is, of course, in Sweden.
Okay.
To Cape Finisterre, which is Finisterre in French, end of land. So it's the westernmost point of Europe in Spain.
So the whole way along.
Well, the whole of this bit, yeah. I mean, this corner, which includes England.
Yeah.
And every creek in Britain and in Spain, every creek in Brittany, of course, not
France.
Britain, but Brittany, and Spain.
He's covered some ground.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But it's also very specific. He's not roaming.
He's pirating.
Yeah, that's right. He's not going to the Mediterranean or the North Atlantic or, you know, not going to Iceland. I mean, he's not just a pirate, but he'll pirate when pirating is easy and profitable.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also a merchant.
He's the coolest one.
Well, yeah, but all, I mean, that's how modern capitalism works, doesn't it? If you can get away with shafting people,
yeah.
You do it.
Yeah, well.
And if there's a Royal Commission and you...
You lie.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly. His barge he clipped was the Maudeline. So his barge. A barge means a vessel of below 200 tons or so.
Okay.
And it was called the Maudlin, meaning Mary Magdalene.
Mary Maudlin.
Yeah, Mary Maudlin.
So he's a religious fellow.
I suppose so. But remember, who was Mary Magdalene?
Well, it depends. I mean, she was the one crying over...
That's right, which is where we get
followers.
The word Magdalene.
But
from.
We think, well, people will argue that she was his wife or some version thereof, yeah?
Yeah, but before that, she was selling her body to sailors.
Oh.
So,
ah.
Yeah.
That's clever.
Yes, that's right.
That's fun.
That's right.
I did know that.
She was just full of little sly jokes. Yeah, exactly. So that's why, you know, you go into any art museum in Rome, Florence.
And there's
always a weeping Magdalene.
But she's a little bit porny.
Yeah, she's showing her tits because that's okay, because she was an ex-prostitute. And now she's repentant, but we can still have a peek at her tits.
Yeah, early pornography.
Yeah, whereas, you know, the Virgin Mary, no, tits are off limits, I'm afraid.
Wow.
It's bizarre, isn't it? But so much of that, you know, is wealthy patrons, and basically people aren't different now from what they were then. So the people who can appreciate works of art as works of art, it's not everybody. And so it's a thing to do. You're a rich merchant in Genoa or wherever. You commission works of art.
To go in your bedroom.
Yeah, well, exactly. You want a bit of porn.
Yes, poor, you know, Da Vinci's like, oh, another one.
That's right.
Nobody wants me for my art.
Exactly. Well, you could combine the two.
Yeah, and they did, but...
Yeah. Well, sometimes, of course, torture porn.
Oh, yes.
All those, you know, St. Bartholomew holding his skin, flayed St. Bartholomew.
Look.
Horrible stuff.
Look, yeah.
But, you know, some people like it. What the punters like. So, that's the shipment. Again, ending with a random detail. With us, there was a doctor of physique.
I like that he's lower than the shipment.
I think
they
after...
They weren't taken super seriously.
I don't think there's necessarily a hierarchy operating here.
Oh, you don't think so?
Well, look, there is to some extent.
Okay.
You make a good point, which is, of course, that the well...
It seems like we're descending.
But it's not a social hierarchy. It's, to some extent, a kind of moral hierarchy, but even that's interrupted. So, yeah, to some extent.
Okay.
To some extent. The problem with doctors is, of course, they were famously seen as, remember Faustus? Be a physician, Faustus. Heap up gold.
Yes.
And be eternized for some wondrous cure.
I mean, you would... They were just tricking people. They didn't know what the hell was going on.
Yeah, basically. They might have thought they did.
Yeah.
And, of course, there's the placebo effect, which can be very effective. Somebody in a white coat takes an interest in you and gives you pink pills, and you instantly improve. Even though the pink pills are made of sugar. Socially, they were a bit dodgy because they were seen to be, greedy and unscrupulous. But then, you know, everybody was greedy and unscrupulous. But also atheistic.
That's right, yeah.
Because if you start curing diseases which God put there, you're kind of defying God. God wants this person to have TB, damn it. It's written in the plan somewhere.
Yeah, so the derogatory term quack as well. I mean, I know that came with the plague, like that's years away, but...
Yeah, but also, yes, but that's more to do with exactly... but it's to do with, you know, ducks quack, 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 and it's kind of empty, mindless speech. The idea, yes, the idea, the doctor gives you a high-flown description of your disease, but it all just bollocks, really. But it sounds good to you.
See, Dad always told me it was because of the plague masks that they wore. Like ducks. Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
Huh.
That's...
Not the father is, you know, particularly well-versed in these things, but I've just always been told that since I was little.
Oh, yeah. Huh. Well, I suppose it helps. But that's the real reason, the quacking. The empty, mindless quacking. So... there's a spoof of this in Molière, in La Maladie Imaginaire, the imaginary sick man.
Okay.
The hypochondriac, we'd say now, isn't
yes,
we?
Yes.
Yeah, how interesting. Of course, he didn't have that term. But the doctor in there explains that his special sleeping filter works. You know, take two glasses of this, it only costs you... £5 a bottle. Or he explains it works because it has a virtus dormitivus in Latin. You know, well, virtus dormitivus means a faculty for putting to sleep, which isn't an explanation of anything. It's merely a rephrasing of what you claim the thing does.
Right.
And that was typical quackery.
Yeah. Right.
But it sounds good. You know.
Yeah, so people believe it.
The funny thing is now, of course, doctors talk a lot of jargon like that, but we
still believe it because we think they've been to school for a long time and know stuff that we don't.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to suggest that doctors are quacks in that sense.
Oh, no.
But it is interesting that necessarily they're forced to use jargon because human body is complicated and we didn't have terms for most of it.
Yeah.
You know, why would you? But it is quite funny that it's all to do with bamboozling. Well, it's not all to do with bamboozling people. Well, except quacks still bamboozle, you know. I mean, hell.
I mean, like astrologists and spiritual healers and Reiki and all that
and
stuff now.
And crucially, homeopathy.
Homeopathy, yeah.
Which is just the most insane bullshit on the planet.
Mm.
Have you ever seen, look it up if you haven't seen it, on Google it on YouTube. Mitchell and Webb's. It's called homeopathic. It's a skit with two homeopathic doctors.
Oh, okay.
And it's very funny. Of it, they go to the pub for a homeopathic beer, which means that you know you put one tiny droplet of beer in a large tankard of water. I want it really strong. Give me a tenth of a droplet.
Nice. Okay, I like that.
It's great fun, but I mean that's classic bullshit.
Mm.
Yeah. How has it survived?
People want these things to be real. Like, astrology is back in a big way. My workplace is riven with it. Like, astrology girlies. And it's almost like they're trying to take back some sort of autonomy because people aren't... I'm trying to figure it out, but it's bizarre.
I mean, astrology kind of makes sense in a pre-Copernican universe.
We are not in that, though.
Well, I hope not. But then if you're a flat earther... You've almost gone back to... In fact, you've gone back way before... before the ancient Greeks, because they knew the world was round.
These girls, you know, someone will come in and be nasty, and they'll say, probably a Leo, you know, as if that... And it's like they have this own private world that
they
understand.
As though that were an explanation.
That we don't, and it's like, no, they're just a dick. What are you...
Yes.
What? And it's like, no, we are better than you, because we understand.
You understand, that's right.
It's bizarre.
Quite bizarre. But as we shall see, the doctor is into
not
astrology.
Much. Okay, here we go.
In all this world, there wasn't known him leak. So again, he's the best of his kind. Everyone from Jeff is the best, finest, most amazing we've ever come across. To speak of physic and of surgery, to speak of physic, that is, medicines and surgery.
And surgery wasn't really a thing yet, was it? It was a hack and slash.
It was a thing.
They weren't doing it very well.
Well, they were amputating limbs.
Mm. That was really all they could do.
That's about all they could do.
Yeah.
Yeah, they tried. So
when you say surgery...
yes, it's not...
I'm just saying that what they mean is just...
keyhole surgery on the duodenum or something.
No.
It's
hack and slash and hope.
Hack and slash.
Infection doesn't take root.
Well, then you cauterize the wound with red hot iron and then bind it up. Yes, I know. Not you didn't want to go anywhere near it, frankly.
Mm.
No. It would be hideous. But also, of course, surgery was way down the social ladder compared to physic. Physic, after all, you're choosing
you're
medicine.
To Lady Doobie-Doo and...
Yeah,
you know.
And it requires knowledge.
Yeah, okay.
Well, think of Lidgert.
Yeah.
He's a physician. He has some status.
Okay.
He's not hacking limbs off.
Yeah.
The barber does that.
Yeah.
But of course, you're familiar with the old barber pole. The red and white spiral?
The red and white, yeah.
Well, that represents a bandaged limb with blood seeping through it.
Oh.
To signify that you're a barber and a surgeon.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, lovely. My knives are sharp. Come on in.
Exactly. Well, that's it. Your greatest skill was speed.
So the demon barber of Fleet Street.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Well, exactly. He was a barber surgeon. He knew his way around. Well. So you know Robert Lister, the famous 19th century servant?
Yes. Yes.
He could take a leg off in 30 seconds. A 30 seconds of pain as opposed to...
And this is what... you won't have seen The Artful Dodger on Disney yet, but I'm filling in quite a lot of maternity leave time, okay, Peter? And it's got Tim Minchin, who I quite like, but they're trying to bring in that historical, like, germ theory kicking off, and, you know, they're all racing each other to see who can cut a leg off fastest.
Oh, yeah.
Right, that's what it's based off. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. That's why, I mean, that's one of the great interests of Middlemarch, because Lydgate is somebody who is up with the latest theories.
Yeah.
You know?
And looked down upon for
that reason, yes. Yeah. Or good enough for grandfather, good enough for me.
Yeah, well.
But he was so fast that in one operation, he also sliced off two fingers and the left testicle of his assistant. Because, you know, when your knife is moving that fast.
Where do you get a testicle?
I don't know. I haven't gone into it that deeply.
Okay. No further questions.
It wasn't deliberate.
I mean, it's not, you know, a finger, I understand.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Yeah, I know, it's a bit old, isn't it? But apparently.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, so, for here was grounded in astronomy. Grounded means, of course, having a proper basis of learning. As in Faustus, he is well seen in physic, well grounded in metals. This is what Valdes and Cornelius explaining what Faustus needs. Grounded in astronomy. And astronomy here, of course, is hardly distinguishable from astrology. Because you're looking at the stars, you're predicting where will Saturn be next Tuesday, that kind of thing. And that's astronomy to us, but for them, because they see the world at the centre of the universe, all these concentric rings, and they're all influencing us. You know.
That's right, because the humours, like Don John is born under Saturn, and that's why.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Exactly.
All right.
So, astronomy is essential. Remember one of the four quadrivium?
Music, astronomy, mathematics, and.
Geometry, I think.
Geometry.
Yeah, geometry.
Which to me is
arithmetic
the same
and, well, arithmetic and geometry. You know, the ancient Greeks didn't have arithmetic, they had geometry. You can do a lot.
That's why we have Pythagoras.
Yes.
Ah!
And you can do a lot in geometry that you can do in arithmetic. I mean, you can add and subtract and multiply.
Okay.
You know.
They just had a different heading. Yeah.
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
Anyway, so he's well grounded in astronomy. He kept his passion to full great daily nures be his magic naturel. So he was good at keeping his patient topped up by the hour, you know, with herbs and drugs and all that kind of stuff, by natural magic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you should be well versed, well grounded in natural magic.
I mean, should I?
Oh, well, because of Gothic and Faustus.
Oh, all right, sorry, yes. Yeah, I was like, me? What? Yes.
So natural magic means using the properties of herbs and magnets. And
this can be white magic or black magic.
No.
This is your herb? This is your local...
Yeah, but it's not... Yeah, so, okay. So, white magic and black magic, or goetism, atheism and goetism.
Yes.
These draw upon the spirit world. You know, Prospero has spirits to do his bidding. Faustus has devils to do his bidding.
Right.
And there are different ways you go about that. So with white magic, you are devout.
Yes.
And holy.
Yes.
And therefore, good spirits do your bidding.
Oh, okay.
Black magic, you're an evil bastard who sold your soul to the devil.
Yes.
And the spirits are constrained to do your will.
Ah, see, I thought part of that was using herbs for either good or evil.
No.
As well, no, okay.
That's
it's
natural
entirely
magic.
Spiritual. Right.
So you've got supernatural magic.
And then natural magic.
Natural magic.
Okay, so this is the bark of a willow tree to...
Yeah. Or a magnet, or the phases of the moon.
Uh-huh.
Or to get rid of
an ulcer, you tie a frog to your leg, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Or
a wart. Oh, a wart. You cut off the wart and you bury it in a bit of meat at the full moon. And as the moon wanes, so the wart will shrivel and depart.
Yes, and this is why people thought they were witches, because what's the difference between that and throwing 2 shillings in the well for St. Doobly-Doo for what's at stake?
Well,
yeah,
exactly.
For
natural magic, yes. A wise woman in the village will use natural magic.
Yeah.
She's not using black magic or white magic, she's using natural magic.
Which really is just science.
it's rough and ready science.
Yeah. I mean, they've... willow tree...
Yeah. Aspirin.
Thank you.
Salicylic acid.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. But if you're a, you know, a peasant.
That looked magic-y and therefore devil-y, and we take steps.
Yeah, it doesn't happen in my house, therefore it's probably magic.
Yeah.
Burn her. Yes.
They're missing steps.
To my self-flagellation, I watched a few videos of Trump, what do we call them? Trumpers being interviewed. And they are barking mad, these people, in a way that reminds you of
medieval. Start to understand how.
Absolutely. Exactly. I mean, for historians, it must be brilliant.
And you read all of these dystopian novels, Handmaid's Tale, Octavia Butler, Parable of the Sower, and it's like, oh, how could this ever happen?
Yes,
and
then I know.
It makes a lot of sense.
I know. It's exactly right.
Right, so magic natural.
So, yes, he's good at that. And, of course, a lot of that does a lot of good, as with aspirin, you know.
They would have been onto something.
Yeah. Look at all the Aboriginal natural magic that we've lost by contempt over the last 200 and...
Yeah, not that long. Not long enough.
No.
It should take longer to erase an entire culture.
It should, shouldn't it? Yeah. But all that knowledge of what plants could do and what plants could do what
and
things...
And farming. Aboriginal farming.
Yeah, all that just despised. What a bunch of pricks.
Well... Western history is
that's
bad.
Right. A bunch of dicks conquer the world and stomp on everything.
Everyone just takes turns.
Yes, that's right. Well, could he fortune in the ascendant of his images for his patient? So, in other words, here he's taking the ascendant is, you know, rising when Mercury is rising in, I don't know, Aries or some such shit. That's good for a gouty toe or whatever, you know. He's good at that kind of knowledge and that kind of bullshit.
People might have believed it because, you know, Aries rising might have brought storms and the change in the humidity in the air might have made your toe feel better.
Yeah,
like stuff like that, which
no
we have
question.
A scientific explanation
there
now.
There would be, because after all, you know, without some confirmation, none of this.
My toe does feel better today. You're right. And there's a storm.
Yes,
you know?
Exactly. Also, the placebo effect, and we don't know quite how that works, but it certainly works. And interestingly, the placebo effect works better the more you pay. If you pay lots of money for your pink goo, it's more effective than if you get your pink goo free.
Okay, cognitive bias.
Get some cheap pink goo.
Want it to work.
Yes. And also, you set more store by it because it costs you more.
Yeah.
That's very much a cognitive bias, isn't it? Yeah. So it's a fascinating study, and somebody must have written a book. Well, not just that. No, but I mean, the way traditional medicines, not traditional medicines, but the way medicine worked over the centuries, the way it must have had enough payback in terms of confirmation. And of course, there's confirmation bias. You don't notice when the medicine fails, but you damn well notice when it works.
That's it.
And this is how, you know, on the internet now, people will sell miracle cures for cancer. And when they start talking about something and they just go on and on and on, you know that they're going to produce some snake oil at the end of it. And yeah, you don't notice when it doesn't work, but you sure as hell do when it does.
Have you seen that fellow who's paying $2 million or $2 billion a year or something ridiculous to reverse the effects of aging?
No.
Have you seen that guy? It's interesting. It's worth a Google.
Okay. He knew the cause of every malady. He knew the cause of every sickness, whether it was hot or cold or moist or dry.
And that's the four humours.
That's the four humours, yes. Which are really just two principles divided and intersecting with each other. So,
hot and cold.
In fact, the four elements. Everything in the world below the moon.
Because Platonic universe is made up of four. What am I confusing here? Carry on.
It's certainly ancient Greek. It's not Plato exactly.
Okay.
It's certainly ancient Greek.
Right.
But the idea is that there are two principles, heat versus cold,
yeah.
wet versus dry.
Yeah.
This gives you four hot, cold, I mean, hot, dry, hot...
A box, yes.
A box, that's right. And this gives you, of course, air is hot and moist.
Yeah.
Fire is hot and dry. Water is cold and moist. Earth is cold and dry.
Yeah.
And on those you impose the special substances that give us vital being.
Mm-hmm.
You know, élan vital,
mm-hmm.
which are the four humours.
And that's your personality. Everyone's
that's your
that
personality.
So, and it was believable. I always say that when I explain this in Shakespeare to high school kids. I'm like, you can think of one of these people in your year level, I'm sure,
yeah.
that are strong.
And well, look, it persisted for 2,000 years. So it's got to be believable.
Yes.
It can't just be bullshit.
And the idea was that if you had an imbalance, or everyone had a natural imbalance, and whatever your imbalance was is what
yes.
created your personality,
exactly.
but also any
except
of the
Except Adam and Eve, of course, were born with a perfect 25%
yes,
balance.
They were fine.
But as soon as you... And it's, think of four equally strong horses tugging at right angles.
Yeah, one horse fucks up.
Well...
after the fall.
If they're all... exactly. One horse gets weaker or stronger, and you drift off center.
Mm.
Now, if you're in the center, you're going to last forever. Because you are balanced. As soon as you get off center, you begin to fall apart.
Mm.
And,
did Milton mention at all? He doesn't, does he? Because he was into up-to-date science.
Yeah, he doesn't. No, he doesn't go in for the humours, except, you know, we still use them colloquially.
Yeah.
We say that somebody is choleric.
Yeah.
But we don't really mean he's got an overbalance of yellow bile.
No.
In his
we just mean that they're a bit sickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Well, no, you mean he's angry.
Ah. Oh.
Choleric means angry.
Okay. Which one's sickly? Moist.
Well, yeah, but choleric is hot and dry, like
okay.
a fire, you see.
Right. Got it.
no, the thing is, about making sense, just briefly, that if you take the... if you have the first opposition between hot and cold, that makes a distinction between neurotic or unstable character types and stable or persistent character types.
Hmm.
And if you take the other distinction between wet and dry, distinction between introverted and then the dry ones are extroverted. So,
melancholia.
Yeah, so if you're melancholy, you are...
Wet.
You are... well, yeah, but that means that you are introverted, but you're also stable. It kind of works.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Because it could be translated into modern terms.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm.
No, sorry, I've misled you there. If you're melancholy, you're introverted, but... unstable.
Okay, I was questioning.
Yes, I'm sorry. Sometimes your words come back to you and you think, hello, did I say that? Yes, I did say that. That was silly. And if you are phlegmatic,
yes,
you are introverted but stable.
Right.
You're phlegmatic yesterday, you're phlegmatic tomorrow.
Okay.
Whereas the melancholy person could be all over the shop, you know.
Yeah.
Indeed, there could be a bit of manic, you know.
Yeah, okay. I should have questioned. I've noticed that's the difference between Ange and I. I just go, oh, yeah, that's interesting. And Ange goes, wait. And she fights.
Well, that's it. Well, that's it. But sometimes one
far too accepting.
One misspeaks.
No, it's fine.
In fact, there was something a couple of weeks ago, but...
You wanted to...
Yeah, correct. But it's gone forever now. Oh, well.
Okay.
I'm
sure someone will write in.
Yes, that's right. Sir.
Yeah.
I write in high dudgeon.
He knew the cause of every malady.
So, yeah, and this, you can see how this looks what we would call scientific.
Yeah.
Natural magic. Nothing to do with evil spirits or... But, of course, as we've said, if you've got a reputation for doing magic-y things, people who aren't particularly sophisticated thinkers... will tend to lump you all together with black magicians John Dee gets his windows broken.
Well, yeah, that library was
yes
lost. And contemporary with Blake, friends with Blake. Priestley.
Oh, Joseph
Priestley.
Really?
Yeah, they're all in the same circle because he was friends with...
Where is hot or cold or moist or dree, and where engendered of what humour? Humours are the, those four humours we spoke of earlier, the sanguine, the choleric, the melancholic, and the phlegmatic, which, as I say, have persisted. We still say people are phlegmatic nowadays.
Mm.
You know, dull and pasty and lumpish. It's interesting, one last word on this before we move on, but it was very important. It governed thinking from Chaucer right up to the Romantics.
Mm.
It was dislodging.
And long before, because it's Galenic.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, right. Long before, yeah. Yes. But,
yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I'm just being parochial and thinking of English literature, but you're quite right.
Yeah. And in 2,000 years, essentially.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. It was a very perfect practice word. Remember, very perfect Knicht earlier on? It's the same word, the true perfect. So he's using the same words that he uses on the night earlier, which are normally taken to be.
But
then, of course, Jeff can't tell the difference.
Neither can I, apparently.
A practice word.
Like a practice.
Well, it's a very interesting word, isn't it? Because you practice upon people, meaning you deceive them.
You have a
them.
Practice, but yes, you yes. also.
Yes. It's like the word profession, you know. You profess something, you're a professor, meaning you're versed in it, but also you profess, you claim. Do you profess to have had breakfast this morning, I could say?
I did, yes, I do.
But but if I say you profess it, I'm implicitly suggesting that your claim is a false one.
Yeah. Words are slippery.
Words are slippery, they are. They're fun. The cause he knew, and of his harm the rota, none he hath the sicker man his bought. So once he knew the cause of the illness, and the root of that harm, immediately, anon, he gave the sick man his remedy. Full ready had he his apothecaries to send him drogas and his letuaries. So he had, at hand he had his apothecaries, which of course are now called pharmacists.
Mm.
An apothecary is such a good word, isn't it? Why don't we... I must go to the apothecary.
It's much more interesting than pharmacy.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But notice the link between the practicing doctor and the pharmacy. And it's quite
because
interesting.
This is a point, Lydgate.
Yes.
Because he does it himself, meaning they can't make money off.
Yes.
Yes.
That's exactly right.
Because he was modern and up to date, not interested in just making the apothecarist's apothecary's money.
Yes, because what he suggests here, what Chaucer suggests, is there's a kind of a league going on.
Yeah, it's no, your toe looks funky. You should go to the apothecary and buy blah 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 after you pay me.
That's right.
Yeah.
For each of them, mad other for to win. For each of them, the doctor and the apothecaries made the other gain.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's. This is like...
That's the actual conspiracy.
Big farmer.
Yeah, well, I mean, in America especially, in the fentanyl and...
Well, exactly. Remember that arsehole who bought out some AIDS drug and then put up the price by...
Yeah, and TB, the same thing's happening with TB, which they're pushing at the moment. Johnson & Johnson apparently bought... They patented both versions, and then one came out of patent so people could use it, but they'd set it up essentially so that nobody could access it. And then there was a big, just in the last couple of months, a big effort to get it back, and they did, which was a huge deal. So,
I mean, it's one of the things that should be naturally run by a government because...
Well, yeah. People's health and well-being.
Yes. I mean, they won't make medicine. They could easily make medicines that cure all sorts of African-specific diseases like river blindness. But they won't do it because there's no
money in it.
Yeah.
Mm.
Which is just so...
I feel like we should bring back the idea of a mortal soul that's going to be punished.
Yes, that's right.
And for me to be saying that is a big deal. I just feel it was, you know, a good incentive
for
people.
It was a good incentive, yes. That's right. But what it meant is that you behaved like a shit for most of your life, and then you built a chantry chapel at the end.
Yeah, well, there was also that. There's no way of... And, I mean, these are all efforts to influence human behaviour to the right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, they are.
And
they
it
are,
hasn't worked ever, because we're shitbags.
Yes.
What is exactly. it? Squabbling on the dunghill of iniquity.
That's right.
Yeah.
I like that. I mean, I like the whole... Shitbag squabbling on the
well, dog. That's yes. that's my addition. I contributed something to this relationship beyond hours of podcast editing.
Oh, for her friendship wasn't that newer to begin. They see that their friendship was not a new thing. You know, goes back a long way.
Mm.
This link. So it's actually fascinating to see that, isn't it? They make work for each other. You go to the apothecary and say, look, I've got a bit of a sniffle. He says, well, I think you should go and see the physician.
Mm.
The physician says, yeah, thank you. I'll take your fee for this consultation. And I think you need a drug from the apothecary. Here's a little script. Go to the apothecary.
Mm.
And, you know, you could then the apothecary could bat you back to the physician and like tennis.
I mean, it still happens.
I know.
It still happens. We have a modern version. And, of course, Jeff misses that and goes, oh, what lovely friends.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, what a good relationship.
Yeah, it's a working relationship.
Yeah.
Exactly. Now we get a long list, and we don't need to go into them all.
I recognise some.
Well, yeah. But these are...
Doctors.
Doctors. These are famous historical doctors... who have written stuff. I mean, actually, Aesculapius, of course, is mythical and didn't write anything as far as I know.
Okay.
He's just a legend. But Dioscorides and Icarufus, Hippocras, of course.
Hippocratic Oath.
Yeah, Hippocratic Oath, that's right. Galien.
Galen
is a very important figure. Well, the first or second most important figure in Western medicine. Up to Vesalius, I suppose.
1543. Monkey answers.
Serapion, Razis, and Avicen. Avicen, so we're moving now into the Islamic world, because, of course, they contributed a huge amount during the golden age of Islam.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly, mm-hmm. exactly.
Golden age of Islam, what's our time?
About the 8th century to the 10th or 11th century.
With the Crusades, so 1099 would be the end?
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
You could connect them. Oh, and also, I mean, the bloody Mongols coming and destroying Baghdad.
The bloody Mongols.
Didn't
happen. Right, they were a mess, weren't they?
They were.
Okay.
They were a blot on humanity.
Yes.
Yeah. They make the Vikings look like friendly chaps who dropping in for a cup of tea.
Ah, and Mongols, Attila? No.
No. He's later. He's the 6th century.
Okay.
Common era. As we should say nowadays. No, the Mongols, basically, the Mongols are now, they live in Mongolia.
Okay.
You know.
Just running amok.
Running amok.
Okay.
Playing polo with goat's heads and that kind of thing.
Oh, lovely.
Averroes, again, Averroes, yes. Remember the famous commentator on Aristotle?
Yes.
Oh. Damasian and Constantine, Bernard, and these now are medieval ones, so he's moved from, it's interesting, the list moves from mythical doctors through ancient Greek doctors. Through medieval,
Islamic.
Early medieval Islamic doctors up to contemporary doctors.
Is Chaucer showing off that he knows all of this, or would it have been common if you were educated?
Look, what are you doing? He's showing that the physician is educated. He's not just a quack.
Mm.
I mean, he's a learned quack. So... listing these names is a way of displaying the physician's learning.
Okay.
I suppose that's more way of putting it. Otherwise, it might look a bit pointless, won't it?
Yeah. I suppose, yeah.
But that's what he's doing.
Okay.
Yeah, showing off, I don't know.
Because he would have to know them all as well. But.
Well, yeah, he knows the names.
Mm, okay.
And, of course, you can't read all of them because...
No, well, you'd be there forever. It'd be like trying to read Voltaire.
Well, that's right. Well, yes.
Yeah.
And also, Aesculapius never wrote anything.
He's not real. Yep.
No.
So, yeah, like, cultural. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, okay.
That's right. But, you know, it's like a sort of metaphor for his learning. It's a bit like the way Milton will have these huge lists of cities, and and part of it is just to sort of evoke an expanse, a broad...
A gravitas?
Well, that too, but also just sheer space and size, you know. Mm-hmm. Like when Satan looks down the globe and sees all these... all these places from there to there. You know, because, you know, you've got to remember that even then most people didn't really move much from their own...
little hamlet.
That's right.
Okay. That's right, because we talked about that dispense with the rivers. Every river would be kind of sacred to that place because it was life-giving and trade-giving. And
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. So there's a logic behind this. It's not just spewing out names. Of his diet, the miserable was here, for it was of no superfluity, but of great nourishing and digestible. So he's careful what he eats, basically. And he doesn't eat to excess, no superfluity, but it was all nourishing and digestible. Middle Ages people obsessed about what they put in their mouth just as they do nowadays. I don't think the fads changed quite as quickly.
No. Was it the Augustine monks who were vegetarian? And
oh, were they?
They
Augustinian, yeah.
Dug up their poop and realised how healthy they were or something, I was reading.
Oh.
I think it was them.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
What, they dug up the poop and thought, hello, that's good-looking poop?
Well, essentially, there wasn't a lot of detail on that bit, but it was were quite healthy. Their faeces was healthy.
I mean, there were very few diagnostic methods for the medieval physician.
Yeah.
One of these was checking stools.
Ah. It would have been helpful.
Well, are your stools firm or are they sludgy?
Yeah, too firm, black.
black and crinkled and costing you the pains of labour to produce.
Yeah, eat more apples,
Eat more apples, there we go.
Fibre.
And your urine was very important.
Because of how hydrated you were.
Well, that's true. So you can tell from the colour if that's good. Remember that Falstaff says to his boy, what says the doctor to my urine, sirrah? And the boy says, the doctor said it was very good urine, but he that owed it, that is owned it, might have more diseases than he knew of.
Right.
But point is, the best way to test it was to sip it.
Oh.
So if it was sweetish, then the person was likely to be diabetic, for example. So they went all crazy, these diagnostic methods.
I guess.
I mean, if you don't mind sipping other people's urine, I can't say it appeals to me.
I suppose it was antiseptic.
Oh, antiseptic. Yeah, urine is mildly antiseptic. Well, that's true. No, you won't die.
How gross. Cool.
Yes. You might just want a nice swig of ale afterwards.
Well, I suppose you would have one on hand.
Yes. But if it were the Queen's urine, it would be pure and perfect.
Well, you couldn't say otherwise, could you?
No, exactly. Heavenly nectar, my lady.
And you delicately trying to say that, I don't know, she was dying of cancer or something. Anyway.
But of great nourishing and digestible, his study was but little on the Bible. And again, that's the second. Doctors are, and it goes over the centuries, they're atheists and they're money-grubbing.
The Venn diagram with Jews and doctors must have been more of a circle.
That's right. But... again, with Faustus, if you're interested in how things work, then it's kind of against God's, kept it all covered up. Remember Raphael telling Adam, don't you stick your nose in that, please.
Yeah.
None of your business.
We're going to do Faustus next, folks.
Oh, we are.
What's up? Yeah.
Yes, that'll be fun.
Yes.
in sanguine and in berce clad was Al. So he's dressed rather showily in scarlet cloth. And of course, the scarlet cloth also has a tinge of the diabolic about it.
Yeah, blood.
Think of the, blood? Well, yeah, blood. So it's naturally red. And maybe that's actually useful if you're a doctor, because if you're, you know, chopping off people's limbs and things.
I suppose it matches, yeah.
Well, the point is it doesn't show.
Yeah.
Unlike white coats, which doctors wear now, which show everything.
Yes.
And in berce, which is a deep, rich red cloth, a blue cloth, I beg your pardon. So he's red and blue, lined with taffeta and with sendal. So it's lined with taffeta and silk. So he's, you know...
He's well off.
Well, he's well off because he's raking it in.
Yeah.
From, you know...
Because Mrs. Jones stubbed her toe and Queen's wee tasted sweet and...
That's right. And, you know, so hypochondriac rich people are... That's where your money is.
And needy poor people.
Less desperate. So, because, yeah, but they've only got pennies.
I suppose. Yeah.
Hmm. And you might catch something from them, too, you know. Also, they smell.
Well, yes.
I always remember that line from the, you know, the Caucasian Chalk Circle, the Brecht play.
Brecht. Yeah,
my
school, sorry.
Put it on. And I just remember this wonderful line where the sort of that higher-born lady says something like, "My dear, I love the common people. It's just their smell gives me a headache."
Unwashed.
The unwashed. And yet he was what Asia of Dispenser. He was still fairly tight-fisted. He kept that he won in pestilence. He kept everything that he gained in times of plague, which would be a lot. I mean, a boom's times, really, wouldn't it? Happy days are here again.
I suppose, yeah. Who benefited the most from COVID?
That's right. For gold in physic... Oh, except, of course, it was a hoax. We all know. And kept at the, for gold in physic is a cordial. There was a belief that very finely powdered gold drunk in a drink, because gold is eternal,
pure,
and perfect,
yeah,
and pure and heavenly. You know, it's got everything going for it.
If you're
working by a sort of version of the doctrine of similitudes, then gold
is the shit.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Nicely succinct. Yeah, that's right. Therefore, he loved gold in special. Therefore, he loved gold. And of course, the joke is obvious and it's rather fun. I mean, there's a bit of a strain on the Jeff persona here, because...
Well, he looks like a QAnoner, really. He's bought it hook, line, and sinker, you know?
Yes, well, that's right. That's right. And now we come to the wife of Bar.
Now, this is a biggie that I would like to spend time on and not rush.
Do you feel we should pause?
I feel we should pause. I don't want to. I'd go on for hours. Thank you.